This is the official EFL podcast with Mark Clement.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the official EFL podcast with me, Mark Clement. And just like that, it was all over. Well, almost. Congratulations to all the teams who were promoted. Commiserations to those who were relegated. The regular EFL season is over. Roll on the playoffs. It's the official EFL podcast. And I can't think of anybody better placed to talk us through what's already been and what might be to come than a man who in recent seasons has managed in all three EFL divisions, the former Lincoln City, Huddersfield Town and Portsmouth manager, Danny Cowley. Who we find, who, what, where, when, why? Where's your life at the moment? You've been out a few months. Are you chomping at the bit to get back in? Are you still resting? Where are you, Danny?
Well, we're living on the south coast at the moment, which is a lovely place, lovely part of the world, Clem. Enjoying some family time, miss football every day, absolutely. And, yeah, just waiting for the right club, the right opportunity, because, yeah, obviously football is a big part of both mine and Nicky's life.
I mean, when you took the leap from being a school teacher, PE teacher, etc., and you had that chance to go full-time, I mean, I suppose you just embraced the moment and didn't necessarily think about the fact that you've been working all your adult life once you've got your qualifications. But management does bring those lulls. There's no 24/7, 52 weeks of the year consistency. There's always going to be gaps there.
Yeah, I suppose so. I think I remember leaving teaching, having a conversation with my mum and dad, and obviously I taught for 15 years, and I was lucky enough to work in a brilliant school in Essex. We were State Sports School of the Year in 2013, and both myself, Nikki and my wife, we all worked in the same department. And I remember my dad saying that I was pretty much leaving a job in teaching where, unless you commit murder, you've got a job for life, and moving into a career in football management where you're never more than maybe six games, or probably in today's world, four games from getting a sack. But yeah, I think for Nicky and I, it was always a dream to be involved in professional football. And for me at 36, I had to wait a little bit longer than maybe I anticipated, or maybe the dream had gone. But it was it was an opportunity that we were going to take, and life is for living, right? And yeah, we've loved every moment of it. And yeah, up until probably Huddersfield in July 2020, I'd pretty much worked maybe 22 years without many days off, for sure. So that gave us a little break then, and then obviously off the back of the Portsmouth experience, we've had a little break, but just a bit of self-care in the gym and working out and trying to train and spending time with the family. Both my children love sport and do lots of sport. So, yeah, pretty much a taxi driver and a cheerleader for them.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. I mean, it's nice to have that kind of reset and refresh, isn't it? I wonder whether when a manager is out, they have a slightly different perspective on the craziness of being a football manager, because the stats this season are, well, I mean, They're phenomenal. It's 50% of the EFL clubs have changed their managers. 11 did it twice in season since the season has ended. And we're only talking 48 hours ago as you and I record this. We've had two more managers go. MK Dons have sacked Mark Jackson. And then Danny Schofield has left Doncaster Rovers. I don't know how you plot and plan what's a good opportunity anymore as you look to get back in, Danny. It seems extraordinarily precarious.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a brilliant game, football, and a game that I love. It can be a challenging industry for sure. And yeah, we live in a world of, I suppose, instant gratification, and everybody wants everything yesterday, and we don't have any patience and lots of opinion and not too much empathy. And this is kind of the society we live, I suppose. And football is just a living example of that. But the draw of being involved in football, the draw of helping players improve and develop and having success. You know, for Nicky and I, we've been lucky enough to manage in eight of the top nine divisions, and our journey has had more success than disappointment. And yeah, we look forward to the next opportunity. But yeah, my heart always goes out to the managers that lose their job. Obviously, we've lived it. I know the implications of that it has on not just yourself, but more importantly, your family. And this is the kind of things that you have to learn to live with. And I suppose experience helps you. But yeah, it's probably the only industry in the world, Clem, where you have to win to be able to give yourself the time to be able to build something that can hopefully be successful. But to this day, and it might not be forever, but at the moment, this is the circumstances that we have to work in, and ultimately the best managers find a way.
Yeah. I mean, Vincent Company aside, if I look at all the teams that have gone up this season, so that's Burnley, Sheffield United, Plymouth, Ipswich, Leighton Orient, Stevenage, and congratulations to Northampton who got over the line, that all the clubs, the managers at least had the second half of last season to put some roots down. There's a bit of longevity there. I mean, that tells us something, doesn't it? Still incredibly precarious and short-term if you compare it to, say, industry and other professions. But nevertheless, there is clearly a thread running through all those promotions of people being given that little bit of time to put a little bit of foundation in place before they get on the madness of the football treadmill.
I think so. I think continuity is so important, isn't it? Because continuity provides a stability. I think this allows you to create an environment where hopefully the players and the staff can then work at their best. And then that's when you can have high performance and have success. I think on the flip side of that, we've seen on occasions where managers go in, you look at Neil Warnock and what he did at Huddersfield in a short-term basis and can have a real impact. So I think there's definitely different ways of being successful. Certainly the clubs that have, I think, a self-awareness to know where they are today and then a clear vision of where they want to go. When you kind of get that start point and you've got the destination and then some continuity, whether that be in terms of the style of play, in terms of the way that they work, in terms of the provisions around the first team, recruitment, all of these things. If there's some continuity in those areas, then I think you can then have success. Certainly recruitment becomes a lot easier, not just recruitment of players, but recruitment of staff as well. When you do have that, when you do have that clear strategy and way of working. But we know football can be an incredibly emotional industry. We know that some of the best business people in the world are involved in football, and they go from having unbelievable business acumen and success in their area of expertise. They come to football and kind of emotion drives all of their decision making. And this is, I suppose, why we love football. And it certainly makes it interesting, if nothing else.
Yeah, but here's the thing. It's all right having a clear direction of travel, destination in mind, so long as that's realistic. And the problem, of course, as well, is that in a lot of cases, there are another, I don't know, half a dozen clubs in your division with exactly the same aspirations, and not everybody can win one of the big prizes. So this is where it all comes together with the whole entitlement of society. In my opinion, everybody's got eyes on a prize bigger than a club's natural position. Now, that's fine. Ambition's fine, Danny. But there's going to be lots of disappointment on that basis. There has to be, you know, three losers in the Championship, the ones that get relegated, four from League One, two from League Two, and other clubs at the other end of the table are going to fall short. And that's the troubling bit for me, that nobody seems to accept that sometimes it's not going to work out for us.
Yeah, of course. And you've only got to look at League One. I think we counted the other day, well into double figures in terms of clubs that have actually lived in the Premier League in the not so distant past. And of course, in that division, only three can be promoted. I think Ipswich were an outstanding team this year, the best League One team that I've seen, and Plymouth to finish above them. Wow, what an achievement Stephen Schumacher, his staff and his players did there. So it just shows you how competitive it is. And yeah, off the back of that disappointment, it's how you manage that disappointment and then how you move forward, isn't it? And I think sometimes the head coach takes a lot of responsibility. Maybe in today's game, they don't always have all the power, but they certainly do take a lot of the responsibility. And I think even, you know, I look at the success that Nicky and I have had in the promotions that we've had. And sometimes, you know, at Lincoln, at times, people would think that we could walk on water and we would get so much credit for the team's success. And the truth was, it's always about the players. It's always the players. The players have such a huge part in it. And sometimes I can often remember in games where my team, maybe a player has scored a goal from 30 yards and a moment of individual brilliance, and we get so much credit for it. And likewise, on the flip side of that, sometimes players, being players and human beings that they are, make an individual mistake and an error, and you take a lot of criticism for that. And the truth is you're never as good as they say you are when it's going well, and you're probably not as bad as they say you are when it's not going quite so well. And I think, they're naturally, and rightly so, is a lot of noise around football. I mean, if we didn't have football opinion, what would we talk about? So
I think 100%, yeah, 100%, Danny. But we've got to be a little bit careful that the manager doesn't become the scapegoat, because you're not telling me if 50% of EFL clubs change their managers that is all, and some and an increasing percentage do it twice. You're not telling me that is just bad managers in all those situations. Sometimes it's the whole culture around a football club, is it not?
I think so. I think it's, I always think success leaves clues, doesn't it? And I look back at the success that we've had. I go back to Concord Rangers. We were there for 8 seasons, even at Lincoln, nearly 4 seasons. And we were able to have good success. We had 1 year at Braintree and had a brilliant year there. But I think our success certainly has been able to build something, to be able to try to connect everybody together, really. I think always a football club is so much more than just one manager and 11 players. The whole football department, the commercial side of the club, and of course the supporters and the local community that play such a huge part in a club's success. And I think if you can connect that, if you can create an alignment, and you can try to create, I think for me, where it's worked best in my experiences is where you've kind of created a sense of belonging, where everybody feels involved and everything feels part of it, and you kind of have that win together, lose together ethos. And then I think it can certainly be really, really powerful. But of course, that requires human relationships, and human relationships, right, they take time, and they take time to build and develop and try to find the trust and the loyalty. So sometimes time is a quality that you have to work towards in football.
I've got the Skybet Championship final table in front of me. Listen, huge respect to Burnley and Sheffield United. A lot's been said about them, both magnificent this season. I'll leave the playoff contenders for just a second. I'm going to also probably leave Reading, Blackpool and Wigan to lick their wounds and regroup. I don't think there's any point in digging too deeply into the what went wrong for them. But I am just looking at, there's a few teams that I've highlighted, Danny, falling short of their objectives. West Brom only just, they were briefly in the playoff places during the final round of fixtures. Definitely Watford, definitely Norwich. QPR would have to be in that mix as well. I mean, what a strange old season for them, Danny.
Yeah, of course, a roller coaster of a season. Obviously, had a brilliant start under Michael Beale, and then I think got to the top of the table. And you know, I've got huge respect for Michael and you know the job that he did. Firstly, working under Steven Gerrard at Rangers and Aston Villa, and then going on his own at QPR. He was a big loss to them. There's no doubt about that. He obviously had inspired that young group of players to perform above themselves. And then unfortunately, Neil Critchley, who'd obviously done a great job at Blackpool and then went to Aston Villa with Steven Gerrard, just couldn't find the right ingredients there. And then Gareth Ainsworth coming right at the back end of the season, and they were on a downward spiral, and it certainly took all of Gareth's character and personality to drag them over the line and keep them in the division. And I think Gareth will be pleased that the season has ended. I think it will give him a time to be able to review, reflect, take, you know, he's certainly been able to, in that time that he's been there, he's seen the players under intense pressure, being in the relegation battle that they were. He would have learned a lot about that group, and that information will definitely help guide him to hopefully make some intelligent decisions in the summer and hopefully have a more stable season next year. But certainly, if you're a QPR fan, you've lived the roller coaster of football emotions.
Yeah, I mean, they managed to just about keep themselves out of the bottom three. Huddersfield Town were deeply entrenched in it. I mean, it's actually a staggering turnaround under Neil Warnock, isn't it? I hope I've got my stats absolutely correct. I think I have. In the end, he took 7 wins from 17 games in charge, enough to get them out, and actually a comfortable distance above the relegation zone. I mean, we can push towards the young and the youthful, Danny, but what experience to come in and hit the ground running like he did. You know, he lands on a Thursday afternoon, gets his first win on a Saturday afternoon, and just keeps it going and keeps it going. I mean, you probably have to put him top three managerial achievements across the whole of English football for the season, wouldn't you?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, I'm so pleased for Huddersfield Town. It's a great club with a brilliant support base, and they've certainly been through the mill. They were really unlucky not to get promoted to the Premier League under Carlos Corberian last year. Had a really difficult first three quarters of the season this year, and probably only Neil Warnock in the whole of football can do what he did, the impact that he had. I think a really astute appointment by Dean Hoyle at the time. There was the club at that time was pretty fractured. The support had lost maybe some energy with the board and with that current group of players and staff. And yeah, Neil Warnock did what Neil Warnock does best, and hugely experienced, brought everybody together. Again, we talk about that connection. I think he's someone that does that brilliantly. An outstanding man manager, was able to get a significant more out of key individuals in that group. And yeah, you look not just their results, because it was more the fact the teams they were playing. They were playing all the teams at the top of the division. And yeah, to finish the season by beating Reading, by beating Sheffield United, by beating Cardiff, drawing with Sunderland, was an incredible run. I mean, 13 points in the last five games was an incredible return. And it's great news for Huddersfield. Because they were, let's be honest, they were dead and buried, weren't they? I think everybody yeah, outside of Neil Warnock thought they were relegated. But just shows you that we talk a lot now in football about the technical and tactical aspects of the game, and it's all gone very coachy and what you do on the training ground. But again, I think Neil Warnock shows the importance of man management in terms of managing the players, in terms of trying to understand them, show them how much you care before maybe you show them how much you know. And I think, you know, he was able to do that and get those players to perform with real consistency at the back end of the season. And you know, for Huddersfield now, hopefully they can look forward to a bit of a rebuild in the summer. Obviously, a new manager, and hopefully back to where I think that they will feel that they deserve to be, which is towards the top of the Championship.
Do you know what? I went to see Roy Hodgson a few weeks ago for BBC Television Football Focus, and we were discussing the age difference, which this is obviously relevant to Neil Warnock and what he's done. And Roy said, listen, I don't have to be aligned in terms of values of culture, of what films or music I listen to compared to the dressing room. What we do, where we do need to be aligned is the universal language of football. And on that basis, you know, we get each other, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. You can always find alignment with players. And yeah, for me, I've been lucky enough to be a manager now. I think this will be going into my 16th season, and I've managed, players of all different levels. And I don't think I've met a player yet that doesn't have some love for the game. I've maybe met some that have fallen out of love with the game, but they've always loved the game at some stage in their lives. And I think when you do have that connection, that can be incredibly powerful. And yeah, for the likes of, you know, Roy Hodgson and Neil Warnock, you don't stand the test of time in football management without having a lot of qualities, and not just in terms of football knowledge and understanding, but also in terms of the skill set of getting the best out of people.
So we do know the lineup of the playoffs, and in the Sky Bet Championship, we are talking about Saturday, old school list reference, tea time. Sunderland are going to entertain Luton, and then on Sunday lunchtime, it's Coventry against Middlesbrough. The reverses are Luton-Sunderland on Tuesday night, Middlesbrough-Coventry on Wednesday night. Thoughts, please, Danny, on our four playoff contenders?
Yeah, well, I think all four teams have done brilliantly to get into the playoffs. All live slightly different journeys this season. But, you know, when you consider Luton, Coventry, Sunderland, not so long ago were all League One clubs, rightly or wrongly. You know, it's been fantastic to see them make the progress that they have. I think it gives a lot of hope to some big clubs in League One, for sure. Luton, just wow, what a season. Just a brilliantly run club. Recruitment has been outstanding, both in terms of staff and in terms of players. And for them to finish third after the season they had last year, to go and better what they did last year, which was an outstanding achievement in itself, and to get 80 points, incredible. But they play a Sunderland team, hugely experienced manager again in Tony Mowbray. I think, you know, I look at that squad, such a young squad, growing by the day. They won't fear Luton. I think the fact that Sunderland at home in the first game, maybe I always look at this and I'm never quite sure where the advantage is, because we know in football the first goal is so important statistically. So in a two-legged game, sometimes I think that the first game at home can be an advantage if the home team really attack it. Sometimes in the two-legged games, they play the first game can be quite, can end up almost like a chess game and quite tactical. And if the home team don't really attack the game, then they can almost waste the opportunity. So it'll certainly be a really interesting tie, that Sunderland-Luton one. And then Middlesbrough, wow, what a job Michael Carrick has done. I mean, when you consider that where he picked them up in his first managerial job, and this is why I suppose for owners it can be so difficult, because we talk about the Neil Warnocks and the Roy Hodgsons, even Tony Mowbray, and these real experienced managers. And then we look at someone like Michael Carrick, who'd obviously been a brilliant player. I'd had a brilliant experience. I really like his journey, actually, after finishing playing, because, you know, he's been at Manchester United. He's worked as a coach, worked as an assistant manager. Certainly would have gained a huge experience from doing that. And he's bided his time. And he's took his time. And I think, you know, Middlesbrough, a clear way of playing, fantastic at the top end of the pitch. Got so many goal threats, such an athleticism about them. And they play a Coventry team. And, well, Mark Robins, again, you consider, you know, in terms of what he's had to go through. I mean, how their start to the season. We actually spent some time with Mark and Coventry in, we were in the Pinatar Arena, Sol Pinatar in the summer during pre-season.
And
So spent some time then. We actually played them in their last and our last friendly of pre-season. So, we knew they were in a good place. And then they obviously had the problems with the ground, which really hampered their start. And the way that they've the way they've come back from that, I think, outstanding. And Mark has done a great job there. And again, it's another sign. He's been there a long while. He's been able to put his stamp. They've got a real clear way of playing. They've been able to recruit to that style, and really overachieved this season. And it's going to be really interesting. Those four teams. I couldn't pick it. You're going to want me to, but I genuinely couldn't pick it. I think they'd be really
scary. I think there's a synergy there with what a lot of people are feeling. The logical head, no disrespect to the teams that finished fifth and sixth, but the logical head goes, it'll be a Luton Middlesbrough playoff final. But you just know the superhuman effort that Coventry have put in. Don't forget, fifth longest serving manager in the whole of English football in Mark Robbins. They were heading for the fourth tier when he took them over 6 years ago. They finished the season with one defeat in 17. He said they must produce the game of their lives. There's them on the one hand, and then Tony Mowbray, the man that arguably Sunderland fans were only so-so about when he took over from Alex Neil. They thought, oh, it's convenient. He's out of work. He lives geographically quite close. And here he is. And what I love about Sunderland is the way they've pulled together a really varied pot of players, from very experienced ones like Danny Bart to using the loan market extremely constructively to revitalising a player like Alex Pritchard, who maybe was languishing a bit and needed to get going again. I mean, I'm quite happy for you not to pick anybody, Danny. Actually, I'm going to let you off the hook on that, and we'll let people decide. We'll move into Sky Bet League One. I mean, we've purred and purred and purred over Plymouth and Ipswich. Well, commiserations to all the relegated teams. There's more than a touch at the bottom of the table. Forest Green, Accrington, Stanley, Morecambe, and then MK Dons. There's a bit of hitting the wall there for me, Danny, that they've exceeded all expectations and resources, some of those teams, for the last few years. And now it's just been a bridge too far to keep it going.
Yeah, I think so. Particularly Accrington, Stanley, John Coleman, the job him and his staff have done there has just been incredible. I mean, for that club, really, it was a non-league club, and now they become an established League One club with even top 10 finishes. I think probably just it ends up catching up with you. It doesn't matter how good a manager you are, how good a recruitment team that you have around you, when you continually sell your best players, and of course at Portsmouth we took Colby Bishop from them, but to lose the Colby Bishops, the Dion Charles, and boys and players of this calibre, they're very, very hard to replace. And I think John's gone on record and said that maybe this year they took a few too many gambles with young, untried and untested players. I mean, I'll be fair. I mean, I know John is his biggest critic. To be fair to him, they're kind of the gambles he has to take at Accrington because that's what their budget says. So it will be tough for them, but no doubt, I have no doubt that Accrington will be right at the top of the League Two next year and fighting for promotion. So,
Dan, do you mind if I jump in there and just saying that possibly Aki's story and what you've just described with took a chance on some young players, just sometimes there's a serendipity of life that it's our turn to be on the ropes, that what's worked for us for the last few years, or where we've got a gallon out of a pipe pot for the last few years, sometimes stuff catches up with us for factors we're not quite sure. It doesn't mean poor ability in selection. They're probably using the same methodology, but sometimes ever so slightly somebody underperforms, or the judgment that found a gem that got sold on in previous years, it's slightly awry. It's the rhythm of life, is it not?
I think so, and I think that can be really true with Accrington, actually, because you look at some of their experienced players, Sean McConville, Seamus Keneally, who have been huge players for Accrington Stanley over the years. They're another year older, and sometimes the experienced players just get, just lose maybe a 5-10%, which then has an effect on all of the younger players as well. So, yeah, sometimes it does catch up with you. I mean, for Accrington, like I said, it wasn't really like in recent years that they've been toying with relegation because they've been so competitive in League One. I think, Morecambe, again, I think I understand why they get relegated. I think probably, again, if you look at the club and where it's at the moment and the finance and probably they lack a little bit of connection, maybe not quite sure where their direction of travel is off the pitch. And that no doubt has an effect on performances on the pitch. Derek Adams is a very tactical manager and is always very good at getting the best out of his players. Probably Cole Stockton come to the party just a little bit too late, had a brilliant end to the season. But they missed the consistency in his play that he had last season. I thought he almost single-handedly kept them in the division last year with his performances and his goals. First half of this season, maybe wasn't able to get to those levels. And of course, you know, MK Dons, wow, I just never, ever thought that they would get relegated with that squad. And unfortunately, you know, you look at that Barnsley game when they were 4-1 up, even the game before that, I think they draw with Cheltenham. Alfie May scored in the 97th minute. But to be 4-1 up then at home to Barnsley and then Barnsley to claw you back. And then they played Burton, I think, over 30 shots, nearly expected goals of 4 and weren't able to score. And sometimes, that serendipity moment, that kind of fate. And, you know, also big congratulations to Cambridge and to Mark Bonner. And credit to Cambridge for staying with their manager, and rightly so, because Mark has done an incredible job over the years at Cambridge to get them promoted and then to have the fantastic last season that they had. And then this year, I think just the way that he conducted himself under, you know, he's a Cambridge boy, he's kind of done it. Mark's done every job at Cambridge United from academy all the way through. I know he's a Cambridge United supporter, so there's no doubt he would have been feeling the pressure. But the way he conducted himself, the calmness and the clarity in his messaging, and the way he created a narrative for that group about getting it to the final week of the season, and then for them to do what they did in the final week and to stay up. Credit to Mark and to Cambridge United.
Yeah, I don't think life's going to get any easier for the smaller clubs in Sky Bet League One next season when we find that Derby and Portsmouth have finished just outside the playoff places. But I want to concentrate on the playoff contenders because we now know Friday evening, the first of the playoff semi-finals, will be Peterborough United against Sheffield Wednesday. And then on Saturday afternoon, it's Bolton against Barnsley. Thoughts, please, Danny.
Yeah, having lived that division this season, I can't see beyond Sheffield Wednesday, personally. I mean, they got 96 points in most years. That's enough to get automatic.
Astonishing, isn't it? I mean, that is astonishing.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, they finish maybe near on 19 points above Peterborough. But you just know football. And you know that when that team that's been fighting for automatics, when they don't quite get to the automatic promotion and then their season is extended, you know the psychological impact that can have on the players and staff. And that's probably why we often see the team that finished just outside the automatic not always getting promoted through the playoffs. So it's going to be a big job for Darren Moore this week, certainly just to try to, just to refocus the group and re-energise the group.
Danny, albeit that they had their six games without a win blip, and then I guess they did find out a week early. It's not like they dropped out of automatic places on the final round of fixtures. I suppose they've had 10, 12 days to reset and did finish with 5 wins out of 6, which suggests they're carrying a momentum. So long as they can get their heads around the fact they need to get another 3 weeks out of their legs, and maybe their minds as well, then that suggests they're carrying good momentum going forward, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, to beat Derby on the final game of the season with Derby having so much to play for says a lot about the quality of the Sheffield Wednesday team. Any team in League One with Barry Bannon in it will always have a huge amount of quality. I think, you know, Josh Windass has been injured. I think he got injured in the Portsmouth game, which was sort of early March, and they really miss him because he kind of just gives them that little bit of flair and that little bit of je ne sais quoi, which I think will be very, very important in the big games. Be really important in the big games. And, you know, if you can get Barry Bannon, Josh Windass, and you've got the likes of Michael Smith in your team, you're a top League One team, that is for sure.
Yeah, just smiling there that you introduced a little bit of French to the official EFL podcast. There's shades of Hannah Waddington presenting the first rounds of Eurovision there when she impressed us all with her French. And there's one of our own, Danny Cowley, sticking a short sentence in there.
C grade in GCSE French, Clem. I'll let you know.
Thank you very much. Well, if anybody is out there looking for a manager with good linguistic skills, look no further than Danny Cowley. Bolton and Barnsley, do you know what I like about those two? I love both of the managers. We should embrace the fact guys that are transitioning out of the game have had success with other clubs so far and are making a darn good fist of the clubs that they currently find themselves in charge of.
Absolutely. And Barnsley, Bolton, I think, have played each other in the FA Cup as well this season. So there'll be two teams that are very familiar with each other. Two different managers, two different styles, both been very, very successful. I think Barnsley, Michael Duff, they've been hugely consistent. Probably a team that known that they're going to be in the playoffs for quite some time now. That always makes the end of the season quite difficult to navigate through because you're trying to keep momentum and continuity, but you're also trying to give the players enough rest. And it's always interesting to see how managers go about that because there's, you know, you can either rest the players and let them re-energise and then go again for the playoffs, or you can have that school of thought that, well, no, we're playing well, let's just keep the continuity, but then you can then lose players through injury. So it's always interesting to see how managers navigate through that. But Michael Duff got a really clear way of playing. I've watched Barnsley a lot this season, got so much quality in terms of the crosses into the box. They always get good numbers in the box. They scored loads and loads of goals this season from outside the box. Got some real quality, both in open play and from set pieces. And a very, very well organised defensively. I mean, Michael Duff kind of comes, his disciple of Sean Dyche. You can see the way that these teams crunch the pitch and their compactness against the ball is very, very good. And they're going to play a Bolton team managed by Ian Everett, who wants to dominate the ball, likes to make the pitch very, very open and expansive, wants to play through opponents, has some real technical players. And that makes for a really, really interesting game tactically. Obviously, Bolton have already had that success in the Papa John's, and to go to Wembley and win. And for that, I can remember being right back in the day at Concord Rangers, actually, and we'd have been in the Ryman Premier Division and we won the Ryman Cup. And I can remember we played Dulwich and Little Otsuma. Do you remember Little Erkan Otsuma? They used to call him the non-league Maradona, and he obviously went on and had a good football league career at Peterborough and Walsall and clubs like that. But my Nicky would have marked him on the day. And we beat them on the day, and we beat Dulwich, and that gave our group a huge confidence. It was like we knew how to win, and we then ended up going through the playoffs and winning the playoffs and beating Lowestoft to get to the Conference South, which was an incredible achievement for Concord Rangers at the time. And but that feeling of winning something was really big, and I think Bolton would have, you know, on a much bigger scale, would have experienced that, and that would have given the group a real confidence. And I think again they're a good team. It's going to be a really interesting tie, that one. I'd be interested to see who comes through. If Bolton do beat Barnsley, I think Bolton at Wembley already had a good experience of beating Plymouth. Could be right there and thereabouts.
Interesting. Sky Bet League 2. Commiserations once again to Rochdale and Hartlepool, who we know were down over a week ago. Joining Leighton Orient and Stevenage, though, Northampton Town. I mean, I've seen a lot of emotion pouring out of managers on the final whistle when they know they're over the line. There was a bit of a pitch incursion when Northampton found out that they had succeeded. But the game was still ongoing. It was as a result of the Stockport game finishing. John Brady's face, he looked as though he was about to cry. He looked angry. He looked red in the face. He looked drained of blood, all in the space of about 10, 15 seconds. We thought about getting him on this episode to join us briefly, Danny, and then we decided to give him a week to go to bed because he looks absolutely knackered. Can you... Can you relate to the fatigue a manager suffers at this point after all that emotional duress?
Yeah, I think he's certainly lived the emotional roller coaster of a football promotion. And yeah, I mean, what a story as well, because obviously I think he took over in a caretaker role when they ended up getting relegated. Then for them to be so close last season, and for the way it happened last season, they obviously beat Barrow final day of the season, and for Bristol Rovers to beat Scunthorpe by the amount of goals they did, and to miss out the way that they did, and then to lose in the playoff game against Mansfield would have been so, so hard to take. And then obviously listening to John and in his post-match and him speaking about off the pitch issues that they'd had to navigate through.
Sure.
The goalkeeper coach lost his wife.
Yeah.
Colin Calderwood lost his dad. And it just shows that, you know, of course, we're all focused on what happens on the pitch, but all of the things you have to manage that happen off the pitch, because, yeah, we're all human beings, right? And we all have a life outside of football. And I think it definitely, those moments definitely give you perspective, but you could sense how important that win was. And it was, I remember when we were at Lincoln and we were trying to get out of the National League, and the club had been in the National League for 6 years. And I can literally, we'd had a brilliant cup run, got to the quarterfinals of the FA Cup. I can remember I always wake up on match day, Clem, with that feeling in your stomach of match day and that anticipation of the game, the nerves.
Yeah,
the nerves that come with it. Yeah, trying to get those butterflies to fly in formation. But I'm literally, the whole of April, I can honestly, so it's normally only on a match day for me, but the whole of April in that Lincoln City run, because we'd had such a brilliant season and I so wanted the players to have the success and the club to have the success that it deserved. And I can honestly say I woke up every day nervous with a form of a level of butterflies. And when we were able to beat Macclesfield and win the league, that was a huge moment. And yeah, I definitely know what John was going through, and just so pleased for him. And also for Northampton, because everyone that lived that journey was so deserving of that moment at Tranmere. And yeah, I think you saw John's chimp there, didn't you? He's like that, the kind of, I'm always really interested in the human brain, Clem, and how we act in certain moments, and the emotion had just taken over the kind of logical side of your brain, and you're showing every emotion possible. And just a brilliant moment, and so pleased for John Brady and Northampton.
Yeah, and that we can experience two contrasting emotions in the same moment as well. That sometimes in life we can be happy and sad at the same time. We, you know, we can feel loved but lonely at the same time. And it was encapsulated. By the way, I'm having that. Try to get those butterflies flying in formation. In another one of my lives, I do work with executives and transitioning athletes on their presentation skills. Public speaking is our number one fear, and I'm always trying to help them find their own comfort zone to stand up in front of a group of people to talk. I'm taking that one away from you. Should just square the circle and say, feels like good business sense from the Radfords, who own Mansfield Town, to give Nigel Clough a one-year extension. Although I did note the quotes did sort of hint, you've got one more year to get us promoted or that's it. But nevertheless, good practice. I do need to concentrate on the playoffs though, Danny. And we now know that Saturday evening there will be a Northwest Manchester derby in Salford City against Stockport County. And then on Sunday evening, it's going to be Bradford City against Carlisle United. Thoughts on those four contenders, please, Danny?
Yeah, I've watched all four teams in recent weeks. I've watched lots of League Two football. I like Stockport. I think Stockport are well coached. I thought that they would go up automatically when I watched them at Swindon, maybe beginning of April, back end of March. And I thought that they were finding form at the right time. Certainly got goals in their team. I really like Carl Wootton at the top end of their pitch. Him and Paddy Madden have got a good relationship. A team that want to control possession for sure, and have got a clear way of playing. Salford again have got to the playoffs. Been a remarkable story. which I think has been well publicised. That's going to be a really interesting game. Got some top League Two players, probably League One players, really, Salford. So that will be a huge game for me. I probably see the promoted team from that tie, from Stockport or from Salford. I think whoever wins that tie will be Carlisle or Bradford. That's what I see. Having said that, obviously Mark Hughes, hugely experienced again. Credit to him, because League Two would have been very different to what he's been used to, but he's got to grips with a level. And Bradford, I think 22,000 in their final league game against Leyton Orient. What a support that is at League Two. Where else in the world does that happen in sort of tier four football, as it were? So that will be interesting. Carlisle maybe have just lost a bit of energy in recent weeks. Probably another team that have known their fate a little bit, like Barnsley, and it's quite hard to navigate through that final part of the season when you're waiting for the important stuff to come.
A brilliant revival, though, of Paul Simpson, of his home city club, from where he took them over last season to get them in the playoffs. I mean, it's absolutely phenomenal. And again, it's those management skills that we spoke about a little bit earlier that are at the heart of how Paul Simpson operates.
Yeah, definitely. I think a huge value add for Paul Simpson. Sometimes it's just the right fit, and you get that feeling with Paul Simpson, Carlisle. It just feels like the right fit. And I think this can be that feeling. You can't manufacture it. It's just something that is quite organic and quite natural. And yeah, I think they will, even though they finished fifth and they accumulated 76 points, I think they probably go in as the underdog in out of that quartet of teams. And that, as a consequence, makes them dangerous for sure. And Carlisle, never an easy place to go.
A couple of teams, we should say, in brilliant form as well. I mean, Bradford have only lost twice in their last 16 matches. Stockport County, one league defeat in 20. Danny, it has been an absolute pleasure. We thank you for sharing your knowledge, expertise, insights into how the game operates. A little bit of French in there as well, just to re-emphasise that. What was that grade you got in your GCSE French? Did you say it was a C?
C, yeah.
Pretty commendable. The sentence had a certain flow itself to it, a certain je ne sais quoi to it.
I don't know, for those that don't know. That's what je ne sais quoi means. I don't know.
I know that.
Clem, I wasn't suggesting for one second you wouldn't know that, because you are just one of the most intelligent men that I ever have the pleasure of working with. Maybe Nikki or someone else who's listening in.
Yeah.
Didn't get to see in French.
Yeah. Well, we underlined it and rammed it home. Danny, whatever opportunities come dangling your way, whether it's a text in 5 minutes' time, a phone call in a week's time, I hope you find what you're looking for, and I hope we're able to talk about you rather than to you about others as soon as possible. Thanks for joining us on the Official EFL podcast.
Thanks, Clem. Lovely speaking, mate.
That is it for this episode. A big thank you to Danny Cowley. If you've enjoyed the episode, then please do give us a 5-star rating. Press the subscribe button and share on your socials if you'd like to get in touch. Our email address is podcast@efl.com. That's podcast@efl.com. I'm Mark Clements. Good luck to all the playoff contenders. Join us again soon for another episode of
The Official EFL Podcast.